here is the agenda. Are there any suggestions, modifications, et cetera, to the agenda?
Yes, minor ones. Sorry, I need to remind myself. Actually, you know what? I think the only thing that might be interesting to talk about if we get more folks on the call is the pull request. I think it might be good to kind of point to, like, this is what we want to be doing. I've got that.
I had the same thought.
Okay, yeah. Great. So that's the only addition.
Okay, so we'll just, I'll tell you what, how about we put that one as, basically we'll put it like right before 7. You know, it's basically at the end of the meeting, but my goal will be to make sure that there is at least, you know, 1 minute to say, everyone take a look at this. Okay?
Cool. Good.
Who joined?
This is Joe. Andrew.
Let's see. Someone joined from area code 540.
It might be easier for...
That's probably me, Johnny.
Oh, you had to rejoin?
No. No,
I used the Digital Bazaar conference with mine. I called in.
Who's 610?
Yeah, so,
that'll be easier.
Yep.
610 is Colleen from Pearson.
Okay. And we have Johnny Crunch. Never mind. Okay. We got it, Dan.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Johnny was already on, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. But okay, great. Johnny, I don't see minutes yet of what's changing in the agenda. Did you catch that? Okay, so... So we're just adding one item, item 6.5, to talk about the new revocation model pull request. Good, thank you. Manu, can you catch 1, 3, 4? Okay, so let's move on. I don't believe we have any new people today. So just very quickly, on the status of the verifiable claims working group creation, there isn't much of an update. There's some discussion about the charter and whether it needs to change. Phil, in an email to the chairs, Phil proposed a change to the charter. We're going to discuss that a tiny bit before, just to see if he really thinks that's necessary. And if so, then we'll bring it back for discussion in the group as to where to go. Any questions about that? Okay. Next item. So there was a possibility of having a face-to-face meeting in March. This would be to tack on to the front, essentially, of the payments group meetings in Chicago. So it turns out that two of the three chairs cannot make it. I sent a request to the various W3C folks, Phil, Dave Raggett, Wendy, to ask them about their opinions about having trying to schedule a working group meeting for that time, since we don't have a working group yet. And also if one or more of them would be able to attend, and have gotten no reply. So we're really close to that time frame. I think, so the chairs wanted to find out sort of what the attendance might be like for such a meeting. We already know of a number of people who cannot attend. So the chairs are currently leaning strongly against having that officially be a meeting. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to their ability to attend or not? The date would be, it's March 21, is that right? 22nd, okay.
Around the 22nd, yep.
Nope, 21st. 22nd is the IG meeting.
I thought it was the 21st. Sorry. Scratch that. 21st.
The other wrinkle that we see coming into this is we're not yet an official working group, but we might become one between now and then. There's a chance in the next 4 or 5 weeks that could happen. We expect there to be new interest from outsiders when the working group is formed and gets publicized. And so we want to be respectful of when the first official face-to-face is after the working group creation so that those newly interested parties have time to plan.
Right, that was Richard speaking. Yes, the issue might be that... right, that they would, I'm sorry, Matt. Sorry about that, Matt.
No problem.
So the issue is that they might not, someone new in the group might not be able to attend, and that's not really a good way to start, is for someone to join and discover that they don't have enough time to arrange to join a first face-to-face meeting. So, I'm going to go ahead and make a chair statement here. Unless there are strong objections, we will not have a face-to-face meeting on March 21st.
Hey, Dan, I'm on the queue. I've been on the queue for a bit. Yeah. Just to provide more information, it does sound like we probably shouldn't have a face-to-face meeting at this point. It's just too rushed, and W3C is not moving fast enough, and variety of, you know, two chairs not being there. These are all reasons to push it. Any one of them by themselves wouldn't be enough, but I think all of them combined is enough to have us delay. Just to give an idea of how this was done for the Web Payments Working Group, so we brought this up. We brought the potential verifiable claims meeting up in the Web Payments Interest Group meeting yesterday. There's a link to the discussion on that. And one of the things that came up was, you know, it is still possible for us to call a meeting. And this may, you know, this may hold, you know, a month or two from now. When the first Web Payments Working Group meeting was called, it was not officially chartered at that point, but the W3C staff sent a message out anyway to the advisory committee saying, we are going to have a meeting. It may not be official by this point, but regardless of whether it's official or not, we expect it to become official, and therefore, please come to the meeting, right? So it went out to the membership, there was proper notice, and there was just a kind of a full disclosure. It may not be officially created, but it looks like, you know, we're going to be doing this work. So if you're interested in the work, please come. So we had the option of doing that. The thing that was convincing to me that each of you mentioned is two of the chairs can't be there and the staff contacts are not responding. So we should not have a meeting if that's the case. That is, you know, having the chairs there is critical, and having the staff contact there so that they can come up to speed is critical. So it sounds like we shouldn't have that meeting. Then the question becomes, you know, when do we have the meeting? You know, do we delay indefinitely until the WG is formed? And then usually it's 2 months after the WG is formed, which pushes us into, you know, maybe May, June timeframe for a first face-to-face meeting. So all that said, you know, I'm fine, no objection to delaying the meeting. But this time around, we may want to do a doodle poll because there's going to be, there may not be a good time to meet, meaning we were trying to tack this on to a bunch of W3C meetings. If we're not doing that, that means that everyone's going to have to make a special trip potentially. So we're going to have to just figure out where people want to meet and you know, what time works for everyone. Anyway, just more information for folks.
Thanks, Manu. We did discuss that. We, of course, right now we didn't talk about what the next steps would be, and that's what you're getting to. We think it's extremely important to have a face-to-face meeting as soon as is reasonable. We do not have to wait for the group to be officially formed, but we need some more responsiveness from W3C staff before it's appropriate to try to arrange this. So we need to be farther along than we are, unfortunately. But then as soon as we're hearing that, as soon as it's looking like the group is getting close and we're not still debating the charter, then the chairs do plan to send out doodle polls and look for a time for a face-to-face meeting so we can get together. Okay, any other questions or comments?
I'm on the queue. I'll jump in. Stone here.
By the way, neither one of you was on the queue. You guys were – oh, wait, Matt. Yeah, I'm sorry, you are now. I take it back. Mine was not before. Go ahead, Matt.
To Manu on that comment, we I'll just point out, look for – to this group, look for an invitation this week from me. I'm going to send out a request for suggestions for meeting opportunities for face-to-face this year that we can start tracking kind of independently. And if there are convenient opportunities to go back-to-back with other events that are happening on this topic, we'll try to align to those. And I want to start putting together a calendar of those kinds of ideas that we would drive into something like the poll. I should send that note out in the next day or two.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next item then. Will be the action item review. And we just lost Matt. Okay, fine. I will walk through that. So Matt took the first stab at sort of tracking what the actions are. We expect that this list will actually go out and become visible in some way. We just didn't get that far. Yet, but I just want to quickly check on people who had volunteered to do various things. Let's see. So one of the action items was respond to privacy issues in the data model, and three volunteers were Adrian Gropper, Nate Otto, and Nathan George. Would any of you like to give an update on your response to privacy issues in the data model?
Hey, this is Nate. I found the issues in there were very confusing, and I didn't really understand what was being asked a bunch, so I wasn't able to productively respond to them very well. They had a lot of very specific industry jargon that I wasn't familiar with. So I suppose a next step might be that I could comment on a couple of the issues where I found that to be the case and see if we can draw out a more accessible meaning from them.
Manu?
Just a quick note. So, you know, a while ago, folks had volunteered to fill out sections of the privacy you know, the privacy section of the document. And I think, you know, Nate and Johnny Crunch and a whole bunch of people volunteered to do that. And then we got into this kind of like healthcare privacy use case discussion, which went way deeper than the original intent. So the original ask was, look at the issues. Someone volunteer to look at these issues and then provide 2 to 3 paragraphs kind of explaining the privacy issue in the spec as a pull request, right? But that turned into like a full vertical horizontal analysis of the privacy implications of the entire data model, which is definitely like we need to do that work, but that's not what the ask was. So I think we may want to recenter this. I think the mistake we made last time is not assigning people to each one of those items. So, you know, for example, you know, with Nate, I think, you know, we should have assigned Nate or he should have assigned himself to a specific privacy issue and then written like 2 to 3 paragraphs that we could put in the spec about that issue. Like elaborating on like correlation or elaborating on, you know, pseudonymous identifiers or something like that, something he feels comfortable doing. So, you know, that action we may want to reprocess that and make sure that each person signs up for a specific thing and they know that they're supposed to write 2 to 3 paragraphs of content. Nate, would that be clear? Like, is that a much clearer goal?
Yes, definitely. And if maybe if we had sort of an email thread or something, or I guess the GitHub thread is ideal, just a little bit more conversation about those would be nice.
What kind of conversation, Nate?
Well, I found some of them just to have words that I didn't even know. And so, I think you're right that I should assign myself some tickets that you know, are pretty clear and are closer to my experience. But the correlatability of usage patterns one is definitely a ticket I could dig into, although that already has 14 comments in it. So lots of people are already digging in. But a couple of them just had some deep jargon that I wasn't familiar with.
Right. So I think next step might be to like get each one of those people that volunteered, and next step is assign a privacy issue to yourself, and you're supposed to write, you know, 2 to 3 paragraphs. So if you look at one of them and it's like, I don't know what this is talking about, that's not a good item to assign to yourself.
Okay, Joe.
Sounds good.
So my question, Manu, the way you just presented that, I think I heard you say that you wanted a couple of paragraphs for the spec. And I think what I took on the task last time was to discuss the issue that we felt we knew something about or cared about. So, I mean, maybe that was, in fact, part of the mistake, because I took that on with the correlation or the correlatability. So that first, you know, I didn't write, here's some language that would go in the spec. I wrote, here are some issues about correlation that maybe we should address in the spec. So, I sort of created an opening to a conversation. And I'm just curious if I'm understanding now that what you really are asking for is language for the spec.
Okay, Manu.
What was initially requested was language for the spec, but that doesn't mean what you ended up doing is not incredibly useful, right? Because you opened up a discussion around correlatability, and that brought up the NIST stuff, and as a result, Adam Migas is going to be doing kind of a general analysis of verifiable claims from a NIST privacy perspective. So we're going to learn a tremendous amount from that. But at the end of the day, these issues should result in spec text. So it may be, Joe, that, you know, by opening the conversation and doing a deep dive, we're going to learn a lot. And then at the end of that, you may condense that down into 2 or 3 paragraphs and put it in the spec. But the initial ask, though, was we have a bunch of blank spaces in the spec, and we need to write at something to start off, right? Because by writing something, that also creates conversations, but at least, you know, it demonstrates progress on that conversation. So usually what we tend to see is, you know, someone says, I'd like to add these three paragraphs of text to the spec. And then, you know, that goes under review and people basically say, well, you know, that text is fine, but that raises issues, you know, X, Y, and Z. But those are separate issues that we can go at, you know, go after later. So we start taking kind of bite-sized attempts at kind of writing stuff into the spec. What we probably don't want is a multi-week long, multi-month long initiative where we try to figure out what text we're going to put in the spec and have that be the final text, right? So anyway, I'm kind of throwing information at you, Joe, and hoping that some of this is useful. But the ask, I think, is the text we put in there doesn't have to be perfect, but we should get something in there that's better than what's there now, which is nothing. Right? So something is better than nothing, and let's move quickly to get something in there.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay. Any other questions on that particular topic? Thank you, Nate. Okay, so along the lines of checking on, you know, sort of volunteer actions, Manu, you had an action to create a new section in the data model for revocation. Actually, maybe this is a great opportunity for you to just talk about that. Give us an update.
Sure.
Instead of later in the agenda.
Yeah, I just realized something that we're going to have to discuss as well. I'm sorry, this is like last minute, but Nate can't assign himself. I think that's also part of the problem. We need to make sure that these people that are going to be processing issues are a part of the team in the VC data model. That's somewhat beside the point, though. So I will take an action to do that. Action, if you can't self-assign, ping me so that I can add you to the team to assign new team members to VC data model for issue processing. Okay, so let me go over the pull request. So I had an action to add a revocation section to the specification. And let me get a link to that here. There's the active pull request here. So add revocation model to verifiable claims data model spec. Okay, so you know, to those of you that are new to this whole like W3C spec editing thing, this is how we get changes into the spec. So Dan did a great tutorial a couple of weeks ago on general GitHub stuff, but this is an example of the type of workflow where you add sections to the spec. So the pull request that I just linked to, if you click on all the way at the top or a little down, like maybe 5 inches on your screen, there's a file changed link. And if you look at that, those are the suggested changes to the specification, right? So basically the workflow that I went through here was to create a branch on VC data model called like add revocation model. So I created a branch. I made the spec changes that I thought folks wanted, you know, to be made, like I proposed something, and then I created a pull request on the specification. So it's basically saying, I would like these changes to be made to the specification, and then I asked for a review. So I put, I think, Dan Burnett, Greg Kellogg, and Dave Longley there just to sanity check the changes. And what happened is they came back with revisions to it. And in Dave Longley's case, he came back with the significant revisions, like basically this is not going to work. We need to change the way we're thinking about this. And that resulted in me going back and changing the proposed language and pushing a new commit and providing new language. And then Dan Burnett came in and said, well, no, you need to fix this stuff and this stuff. And Greg Kellogg said that there are issues here and there. So we went back and forth several times over the last 2 days. to refine the pull request. And each time I made changes, I pinged the appropriate people that had issues with it so that they could re-review it. And that, you know, that there's 16, you know, back and forths in the conversation, but that resulted in the reviewers eventually saying, yes, this language looks good to me for now, right? And that's kind of where we are. So there is this is an example of, you know, if you are going to assign an issue to yourself to do like stuff in the privacy section, so like Nate, Johnny Crunch, Joe, this is the same process that each of you are going to go through. You're going to, you know, create a new branch, add some text, create a pull request, and then ask for reviews, and then we'll go back and forth in the conversation until people are happy with the text. And then once everyone's fairly happy with it, I think, you know, we'll, on the call, typically you say this looks good and gets merged in. So I know I went really quickly there. Dan, is that what you wanted to discuss, or did you want to discuss the pull request more specifically?
No, that was it. And in fact, all I was going to do was mention, all I wanted to say was that I did send out a couple of slide presentations. So there's part one and part two, and it's essentially on how to do pull requests. So if you have no idea how to do this, if this is completely new to you, you need to find those on the mailing list. I was just going to try to find them now, but I couldn't do it before. You know, before Manu asked me for my comments, but I'll see if I can find those as we go forward. Anyway, please do look at those because they actually walk through the steps of creating the pull request. Once you have the pull request, then it's everything that Manu talked about. The one other comment I'll make, that's one thing that's very nice about GitHub, is that the files changed tab contains sort of the final version so far. So as Manu, as others update it, whenever you go to that files change tab, it will show you the combination of all the changes. So that's really all you need to review. You can look at the individual comments or individual commits if you want, but for the most part, the files changed will be where you'll look. Okay. Let's see. Thank you, Manu, for that update. Any questions on Manu's update there? Okay. Let's see. We have listed that Manu and Adrian, we're going to do a privacy analysis for Adrian's use case. I suspect there were more people than that. I'm not sure this list is complete. Would anyone who volunteered like to comment on that? Have you looked at it, Manu, for example?
I think Joe is leading that work, so he's better qualified.
So I'm definitely one of the volunteers. I think Adam's on the queue on this. In fact, I think that's the current, the most recent update. Is that he was going to lead us through. He was trying to get a hold of some templates from someone who knows that topic well.
Yeah, it's Adam. That's right. I've got the spreadsheets from NIST, and I'll be starting from there. I think I'll take an initial stab at them and then probably offer them up to everybody else who volunteered to take a look, and then depending on how that goes, we can have a discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Joe, one other thing that I believe you agreed to do last week is just in general to update the issues in the GitHub issues for the use case repo, just as you know, as various discussions happen. Anything you want to say about that, or anything you need help with?
Yeah. So I actually did that immediately after the call, but I think the prescription discussion that was in correlatability in the data model forked into a conversation in use cases under the prescription use cases. So I updated one of those, and I think you may have been looking at the other one thinking I didn't get an update in there.
No, I was just asking in general. I know that you did some work, but I didn't want myself to try to enumerate what I thought you had done.
Okay, fine. Yeah, so I took my notes that I typed up as we were going, as I was just organizing them in a notepad, and I put that over on issue 38 on the VC use cases. So that's in there.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. Manu.
Johnny's in front of me.
Yeah, so
sorry about that.
No worries. So I did see a couple of emails fly by. Actually, I've been traveling. I just got back late last night, so I apologize. I'll take a look what in my email box as far as what has been assigned to me and actually update some of the discussion regarding privacy and healthcare. I guess it was Joe or Adam, I think. If you have that spreadsheet, I'd be happy to help chip away at it.
Thank you. Manu?
Yeah, so this is a question for Joe. I'm adding a link to the spec. So this is the section in the spec where we talk about usage patterns and correlatability. So when verifiable claims are used, can they be used for correlation purposes? So Joe, I think the specific action out of here, everything that you've done to date is great and it's very useful. The question is more specific. So for this issue specifically, do you feel that you could write like 2 to 3 paragraphs around correlatability of usage patterns, just a general like, hey, when you use verifiable claims and it has things like unique identifiers of some kind, like a social security number or a decentralized ID that's long lived, that information can be used to correlate you from one, place to another. Like basically 2 or 3 paragraphs to just say, heads up, if you have permanent identifiers in your information, they can be used to correlate. Do you think you would be able to write a section like that anytime soon, or do you feel that you need to do more like digging into the healthcare use case to do justice to that section?
I could definitely write some sections on correlatability, so don't feel that I'm blockaded by the the deeper dive that we're doing over around the prescription use case. But I do have, I clicked over on the link and looked at usage pattern. We also have several other places where there's correlation. And sort of my general point about correlatability was a bit larger. I guess, do you want me to just take a rev?
Yes.
Minimally based on what I opened that whole conversation about, that correlation is complicated, and see if I can get that in there.
Yeah, and in fact, you might we may not want to talk about correlation because it is really complicated and really big thing. It's the privacy consideration section. We may want to zoom down into like one aspect of correlatability, like the way you use these claims, how you use them, the patterns of usage can lead to correlation, and that's bad, right? Or rather, we shouldn't say good or bad. We should just say the way you use these can lead to correlation. Like, you know, for example, you use your digital driver's license to, you know, buy tobacco and alcohol, and that just happens to have like a DID in it, a decentralized identifier in it, and then you go and you provide a proof of age credential to someone that owns the store. Well, your information can be correlated, right? Or if there's a clearinghouse behind the scenes, the information can be correlated there just based on your usage patterns. I'm unsure exactly what to write, but it's just a focus on usage patterns and correlatability. It's not a larger conversation about correlatability, which I'm sure touches many of the items in the privacy consideration section.
I see. So that particular issue is about the usage patterns. I mean, I get that. So, yeah, I would assign myself if I could do that. So I'm happy to draft a paragraph or two. You know, the sort of high-level challenge that I think maybe I can distill it down to is the language assumes that correlation is undesired, but other places in the spec we're explaining how you do correlation intentionally. And so I don't think we've teased out the distinctions around the fact that sometimes you are explicitly using these claims to correlate, and other times you're using the claims to help prevent unwanted correlation. And that's what I think is getting missed in the current text.
Okay. Manu?
Yes, I totally agree with you, Joe. We haven't made that distinction very clear. We've attempted to in Section 5, so make sure that you read the text that is there in Section 5 before writing your section, because we do talk about, you know, a spectrum of privacy, everything from pseudonyms all the way to highly correlatable stuff. So if you feel that text is lacking, that's another pull request that, you know, you should make. But specifically, you know, you also mentioned that, you know, you looked at a number of items in here, and it's clear that correlatability has to do with a number of these items. Do not take that list as gospel. It has not gone through a vetting process. It's something that we came up with at Rebooting Web of Trust through a day of discussing, you know, privacy considerations. So if there are items missing, please add them. If there are items that need to be merged, please suggest that they need to be merged. And any modifications. I think that whole section is up for grabs, especially if we can figure out a clearer way of expressing the various concerns around privacy by doing so.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on this topic? Okay. Okay. So I'll drop the links in there. There are actual links to be able to get to the attachments, Adam. But I'll drop those in towards the end. So the chairs were talking about again what we've been doing and sort of ways to help help accelerate progress. And one of the things that we think would be useful at this point is to go ahead and begin the process of actually gathering requirements. Now, I understand we have a use cases and requirements document, and it has some requirements in it. The requirements in there are more like user tasks with a collection of requirements for each. So they're a really good starting point for I think a complete list of requirements. Now let me say that one of the reasons for having a list of requirements is to help us have something that we can then order and choose to focus on first. I've seen groups deep end on requirements discussions, and we really don't want to do that. In terms of W3C process, when you get towards the end, almost nobody actually looks at the requirements document again. But it is used early on to help help structure the discussions. So we do have the issues in GitHub, but the requirements will also help us there as well. So the chair sent out a call for requirements. We do not yet have a predefined place for where they will end up, as in which document. But that we just sort of want to see what we'll get, and then we can figure out where they need to go. We asked that they be sent an email. I dropped the link into IRC for the specific request with what we were asking for. So let me just check here to see if there are any questions. Sorry, on my keyboard, the plus and the question mark are very close to each other. So, Manu.
Yeah, just a clarifying question. We have a user task section in the use cases document, and you may have been alluding to this, and it has a list of
requirements.
That's
what I was referring
already.
To.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So that is our starting list? Is that
well, so
the assertion?
Let me be
or?
Clear. When no. It contains items that should be used as a starting point. Now, the distinction is if you actually read through the user tasks, each of them, you'll see that some of them actually have multiple single-line requirements. Okay, so this must be supported. This may also be supported. This must be supported. And so we are looking for requirements of that sort, specifically requirements on the data model and syntax specification, because that's ultimately what we will be delivering. I would like to encourage anyone to feel free to submit those as requirements into this list. But again, not the paragraph, right? So if you go and read that section, you'll see what I'm talking about. The user tasks, in some cases, contain more than one requirement each. Manu, does that answer your question, or do you have further questions about that?
It does, thank you. I'm wondering if we should create a Google Doc that everyone can jump in and just add items. I mean, sending to the mailing list is good. I'm just wondering if trying to figure out what would allow people to kind of jump in and just start adding stuff, low friction.
I understand. We talked about that. Even within the group of chairs, not everyone is comfortable using Google Docs. And so rather than deep end on where it should go, I wanted to at least get started. So at least if it comes to the mailing list, it is archived and retrievable. We may end up going with a Google Doc, so anyone who has suggestions for a format, feel free to send them in, and we'll talk about it. We may end up doing a Google Doc. I'm just saying we had some issues early on when we were trying to decide that. Manu?
We just create an issue? I guess I'm sorry.
Would there be any objections for me just starting a Google Doc and trying to track everything that's coming into the mailing list and people can add to it, you know, whenever they want to? And then, I mean, I guess the question is, like, what's the concern over? Is it to make sure that we have an archive? Because if it's an archive concern, we can always send the Google Doc to the mailing list on a regular basis. The goal here being try to get lots of people to submit, and we have had the best experience using Google Docs, even though I understand that our friends in China don't have access to Google Docs and people in financial services firms don't always have access to Google Docs.
Joe?
I blurted out earlier, just, you know, maybe an issue in GitHub. I mean, my concern with the email list is it's hard to scan that and review the list because it has other traffic in it.
Yeah, I understand. One of my concerns with a Google Doc is that it's a live doc. And yes, it can be nice for people to throw stuff into live docs, but whatever. Let's just see if anyone has an objection to Google Doc. Okay, so Manu, let's talk about where that doc should live. Okay?
Okay.
We'll just talk offline.
Sounds good.
Okay. Given the relatively small percentage of our group that is on the call today, no one is objecting. I just want to point that out. We actually are missing a lot of people today. But let's go ahead and start with that, and then we'll see where to go from there. Okay. Anything else on that? The question mark is not behaving here. Okay. So we had taken a look at use case issue 18. Which is here, and we believe it's okay to close that one now. So we just wanted to do a final check with the group. It looks like there have been some comments since then. Richard, do you have anything you want to say about this one? When the chairs talked about this on Friday, we were thinking it could be closed, but we've got some new comments now.
I'm not sure why. Are you talking to me?
Yes.
I'm not sure I had comments on it. Is this the one?
So, Joe, you were the last one who had comments on this until all of a sudden, Matt commented, and then we got some other discussion. So it looks like – so Matt was suggesting that we close the issue and use Holder. Who is FAC3? If you look at the issue, FAC3 commented.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Someone external to the group.
That's interesting.
Yeah, someone outside of the group.
The comment you referenced, Estevive Roman, I actually prefer presenter, but my comment was this is not a new issue and we're going to be hitting these sorts of issues again, especially once more people come in. So I was trying to nip the eternal terminology conversation in the bud.
Was that Joe or Matt?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think we're going to have plenty of terminology discussions once the working group starts up. We're going to potentially have new people come in and have different opinions. So I don't know that we could even get very far on this right now, because people will have different things to say.
Okay, so at this point, Matt said, Holder may not be perfect, but barring any protests from the group, I suggest we close this. But we're actually essentially getting protests from the group. So scratch that. I think the decision is do not close yet, unfortunately. And you're right, Dave, these will go on forever. Okay. So the next topic was issue 34. We just wanted, as chairs, we just weren't clear on what the next steps were for that one.
Yeah, it's a good question. So this is Joe. I think that's a question mostly for me. There was a, over on issue 39, Matt brought up the desire that some of our use cases have presumptive background activity in them, and so we don't have a good perspective on the full, what I would call a life cycle. I forget the term Matt used. So, you know, managing their portfolio is how Matt put it. So what I was offering was that, you know, this might be a way to discuss sort of that life cycle of a verifiable claim in a given use case. So we could do this for prescriptions. I give a link to the current work on YORM, which is a refugee crisis situation, which when that's published, I'd like to introduce that to the group, but it's not published yet. And this may be what I could have a conversation with Matt about the professional credentials and walking through. The best example, if you just click through to YORM, you can see, you know, it's about a paragraph in each of those 12 steps. Well, it's a couple of paragraphs in each of those steps. So it's a non-trivial amount of work. We certainly can't do it with that many. We just don't have the resources or space.
So what does that mean?
Okay, well, I think I think this is a format that's available for folks who want to do a deep dive in a particular topic as part of our process. So if Matt wants to do a deep dive on professional credentials and, you know, managing the portfolio of that, I would be happy to work through this model with him and get that into our conversation. I'm happy to do that with prescriptions as well. I'm working with Chris Allen for rebooting Web of Trust. I don't know if that's going to make sense to propose, but I think we have another issue that has some of the draft early language in this. So to me, the next step here is making a call about which topic is worth investing the time to do this work. Because we're not going to do this work for every possible domain in our current needs map.
Right. Manu?
I was putting you first. I think the question of where we put focus, with, you know, what the group is working on. So it's fairly clear that we have the right people here to discuss education and healthcare. Potentially retail. So those are the three, you know, as far as I see it, at least right now, those are the three choices for lifecycle engagement models. Joe, I think we meaning Digital Bazaar, is very interested in doing lifecycle engagement in the retail space when it comes to things like digital coupons and loyalty. So happy to work with you on that. We're not quite there yet. But, you know, I think there are three choices at this point. It's, you know, healthcare, which Adrian Gropper and Joe have started working on. There's education, which is what, you know, really where this work got started. But, you know, we need someone to kind of pick up the mantle for that and take it forward. And then there's, you know, retail, and we, meaning Digital Bazaar, is happy to do that. I don't know if anyone else has some, you know, life cycles that they want to apply this model to.
So let me just jump in. We're basically out of time. What I was going to say, Manu, was it really just depends. I think the answer to this question is whoever's willing to do it, right? So we can use this model whenever there's someone who is motivated enough to, you know, has the experience and is motivated enough to do it. I don't think it's something that we can just declare and then expect some magic person in the cloud to do. Which is why you're pointing out three areas that you believe we actually have people capable of doing this and interested: retail, education, healthcare. So let's start with that. And if someone else comes forward with one that they're prepared to do, then we can expand beyond those three. We are out of time, folks, so I'm going to go ahead and end the call. Thank you very much. If you have any suggestions for next week's agenda, please feel free to send them to the mailing list or the chairs, and we'll look at including them in next week or in an upcoming meeting. If not, we'll come up with something for next week. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks all.
Talk with you next week.
Great. Thanks.